excerpt from Lud in the Mist by Hope Mirrilees. The Free State of Dorimere was a very small country, but seeing that it was bounded on the south by the sea and on the north and east by mountains, while in its centre consisted of a rich plain watered by two rivers, a considerable variety of scenery and vegetation was to be found within its borders. Indeed, towards the west, in striking contrast with the pastoral sobriety of the central plain, the aspect of the country became, if not tropical, at any rate, distinctly exotic. Nor was this to be wondered at, perhaps, for beyond the debatable hills, the boundary of Dorimere in the west, lay Fairyland. There had, however, been no intercourse between the two countries for many centuries. The social and commercial centre of Dorimere was its capital, Lud in the Mist, which was situated at the confluence of two rivers about 10 miles from the sea and 50 from the Elfin Hills. Lud in the Mist had all the things that make an old town pleasant. It had an ancient guild hall, built of mellow golden bricks and covered with ivy, and when the sun shone on it, it looked like a rotten apricot. It had a harbour in which rode vessels with white and red and tawny sails. It had flat brick houses, not the mere carapace of human beings, but ancient living creatures, renewing and modifying themselves with each generation under their changeless antique roofs. It had old arches, framing delicate landscapes that one could walk into, and a picturesque old graveyard on the top of a hill, and little open squares where comic Baroque statues of dead citizens held levees attended by birds and lovers, and insects and children. It had indeed more than its share of pleasant things, for as we have seen, it had two rivers. Also, it was plentifully planted with trees. One of the handsomest houses of Lud in the Mist had belonged for generations to the family of Chanticleer. It was of red brick, and the front, which looked onto a quiet lane leading into the high street, was covered with stucco, on which flowers and fruit and shells were delicately modelled, while over the door was emblazoned a fine stylized cockerel, the badge of the family. Behind it had a spacious garden, which stretched down to the River Dapple. Though it had no lack of flowers, they did not immediately meet the eye, but were imprisoned in a walled kitchen garden, where they were planted in neat ribbons, edging the plots of vegetables. Here too, in spring, was to be found the pleasantest of all garden conjunctions, thick yew hedges and fruit trees in blossom. Outside this kitchen garden, there was no need of flowers, but they had many substitutes. Let a thing be but a sort of punctual surprise, like the first cash of violets in March. Let it be delicate, painted and gratuitous, hinting that the creator is solely preoccupied with aesthetic considerations and combines disparate objects simply because they look so well together. And that thing will admirably fill the role of a flower. In early summer, it was the doves with the bloom of plums on their breasts, waddling on their coral legs over the wide expanse of lawn, to which their propinquity gave an almost startling greenness that were the flowers of the Chanticleer's garden. And the trunks of birches are as good on any day as white blossom, even if there had not been the acacias in flower. And there was a white peacock, which in spite of its restlessness and harsh shrieks, had something about it too, of a flower. And the dapple itself, stained like a palette, with great daubs of colour reflected from sky and earth, and carrying on its surface in autumn red and yellow leaves, which may have fallen on it from the trees of Fairyland, where it had its source. Even the dapple might be considered as a flower growing in the garden of the Chanticleers. There was also a pleached alley of hornbeams. To the imaginative, it is always something of an adventure to walk down a pleached alley. You enter boldly enough, but very soon you'll find yourself wishing you had stayed outside. It is not air that you are breathing, but silence, the almost palpable silence of trees. And is the only exit that small round hole in the distance? Why, you will never be able to squeeze through that. You must turn back. Too late. The spacious portal by which you entered has, in its turn, shrunk to a small round hole. An excerpt from Lud in the Mist by Hope Mirrilees. The Free State of Dorimere was a very small country, but seeing that it was bounded on the south by the sea and on the north and east by mountains, while in its centre consisted of a rich plain watered by two rivers, a considerable variety of scenery and vegetation was to be found within its borders. Indeed, towards the west, in striking contrast with the pastoral sobriety of the central plain, the aspect of the country became, if not tropical, at any rate, distinctly exotic. Nor was this to be wondered at, perhaps, for beyond the debatable hills, the boundary of Dorimere in the west, lay fairyland. There had, however, been no intercourse between the two countries for many centuries. The social and commercial centre of Dorimere was its capital, Lud in the Mist, which was situated at the confluence of two rivers about 10 miles from the sea and 50 from the Elfin Hills. Lud in the Mist had all the things that make an old town pleasant. It had an ancient guild hall, built of mellow golden bricks and covered with ivy, and when the sun shone on it, it looked like a rotten apricot. It had a harbour in which rode vessels with white and red and tawny sails. It had flat brick houses, not the mere carapace of human beings, but ancient living creatures, renewing and modifying themselves with each generation under their changeless antique roofs. It had old arches, framing delicate landscapes that one could walk into, and a picturesque old graveyard on the top of a hill, and little open squares where comic baroque statues of dead citizens held levees attended by birds and lovers and insects and children. It had indeed more than its share of pleasant things, for as we have seen, it had two rivers. Also, it was plentifully planted with trees. One of the handsomest houses of Lud in the Mist had belonged for generations to the family of Chanticleer. It was of red brick, and the front, which looked onto a quiet lane leading into the high street, was covered with stucco, on which flowers and fruit and shells were delicately modelled, while over the door was emblazoned a fine stylized cockerel, the badge of the family. Behind it had a spacious garden, which stretched down to the River Dapple. Though it had no lack of flowers, they did not immediately meet the eye, but were imprisoned in a walled kitchen garden, where they were planted in neat ribbons, edging the plots of vegetables. Here too, in spring, was to be found the pleasantest of all garden conjunctions, thick yew hedges and fruit trees in blossom. Outside this kitchen garden, there was no need of flowers, but they had many substitutes. Let a thing be but a sort of punctual surprise, like the first cash of violets in March. Let it be delicate, painted and gratuitous, hinting that the creator is solely preoccupied with aesthetic considerations and combines disparate objects simply because they look so well together. And that thing will admirably fill the role of a flower. In early summer, it was the doves with the bloom of plums on their breasts, waddling on their coral legs over the wide expanse of lawn, to which their propinquity gave an almost startling greenness that were the flowers of the Chanticleer's garden. And the trunks of birches are as good on any day as white blossom, even if there had not been the acacias in flower. and there was a white peacock, which in spite of its restlessness and harsh shrieks, had something about it too, of a flower. And the dapple itself, stained like a palette, with great daubs of colour reflected from sky and earth, and carrying on its surface in autumn red and yellow leaves, which may have fallen on it from the trees of fairyland, where it had its source. Even the dapple might be considered as a flower growing in the garden of the Chanticleers. There was also a pleached alley of hornbeams. To the imaginative, it is always something of an adventure to walk down a pleached alley. You enter boldly enough, but very soon you find yourself wishing you had stayed outside. It is not air that you are breathing, but silence, the almost palpable silence of trees. And is the only exit that small round hole in the distance? Why, you will never be able to squeeze through that. You must turn back. Too late. The spacious portal by which you entered has, in its turn, shrunk to a small round hole. An excerpt from Lud in the Mist by Hope Mirrilees. The Free State of Dorimere was a very small country, but seeing that it was bounded on the south by the sea and on the north and east by mountains, while in its centre consisted of a rich plain watered by two rivers, a considerable variety of scenery and vegetation was to be found within its borders. Indeed, towards the west, in striking contrast with the pastoral sobriety of the central plain, the aspect of the country became, if not tropical, at any rate distinctly exotic. Nor was this to be wondered at, perhaps, for beyond the debatable hills, the boundary of Dorimere in the west, lay fairyland. There had, however, been no intercourse between the two countries for many centuries. The social and commercial centre of Dorimere was its capital, Lud in the Mist, which was situated at the confluence of two rivers about 10 miles from the sea and 50 from the Elfin Hills. Lud in the Mist had all the things that make an old town pleasant. It had an ancient guild hall, built of mellow golden bricks and covered with ivy, and when the sun shone on it, it looked like a rotten apricot. It had a harbour in which rode vessels with white and red and tawny sails. It had flat brick houses, not the mere carapace of human beings, but ancient living creatures, renewing and modifying themselves with each generation under their changeless antique roofs. It had old arches, framing delicate landscapes that one could walk into, and a picturesque old graveyard on the top of a hill, and little open squares where comic Baroque statues of dead citizens held levees attended by birds and lovers, and insects and children. It had indeed more than its share of pleasant things, for as we have seen, it had two rivers. Also, it was plentifully planted with trees. One of the handsomest houses of Lud in the Mist had belonged for generations to the family of Chanticleer. It was of red brick, and the front, which looked onto a quiet lane leading into the high street, was covered with stucco, on which flowers and fruit and shells were delicately modelled, while over the door was emblazoned a fine stylized cockerel, the badge of the family. Behind it had a spacious garden which stretched down to the River Dapple. Though it had no lack of flowers, they did not immediately meet the eye, but were imprisoned in a walled kitchen garden, where they were planted in neat ribbons, edging the plots of vegetables. Here too, in spring, was to be found the pleasantest of all garden conjunctions, thick yew hedges and fruit trees in blossom. Outside this kitchen garden, there was no need of flowers, but they had many substitutes. Let a thing be but a sort of punctual surprise, like the first cache of violets in March, Let it be delicate, painted and gratuitous, hinting that the creator is solely preoccupied with aesthetic considerations and combines disparate objects simply because they look so well together. And that thing will admirably fill the role of a flower. In early summer, it was the doves with the bloom of plums on their breasts, waddling on their coral legs over the wide expanse of lawn, to which their propinquity gave an almost startling greenness that were the flowers of the Chanticleer's garden. And the trunks of birches are as good on any day as white blossom, even if there had not been the acacias in flower. And there was a white peacock, which in spite of its restlessness and harsh shrieks, had something about it too, of a flower. And the dapple itself, stained like a palette, with great daubs of colour reflected from sky and earth, and carrying on its surface in autumn red and yellow leaves, which may have fallen on it from the trees of fairyland, where it had its source. Even the dapple might be considered as a flower growing in the garden of the Chanticleers. There was also a pleached alley of hornbeams. To the imaginative, it is always something of an adventure to walk down a pleached alley. You enter boldly enough, but very soon you find yourself wishing you had stayed outside. It is not air that you are breathing, but silence, the almost palpable silence of trees. And is the only exit that small round hole in the distance? Why, you will never be able to squeeze through that. You must turn back. Too late. The spacious portal by which you entered has, in its turn, shrunk to a small round hole.